The Heaven Field, a novel by I.G. Hume, read by the author. Episode 2, Heaven Decays.
"Get them back, now!" Grace shouted, as she charged into the control room, making everybody jump in surprise. "I want them all back, right this second!"
Jane Honeyman, who had been acting head whilst Grace checked Patty's record, bustled up to her.
"Is something wrong, Grace? What's going on?"
"I want the return beacon sent this instant. Dan, reconfigure the transmitter." "Where the bloody hell's Dan gone?" she fumed.
Jane looked around in a fluster.
He was here a minute ago. He must have gone to the loo.
Oh, the idiot. He knows he shouldn't leave without telling someone. Never mind, I'll do it myself. Just send someone to get him."
She strode to Dan's empty workstation and set to work on the recalibration of the beacon, which had to be sent into the field to notify the team to prepare for their return.
"Keith, go and find Danelle. He's probably in the toilet," snapped Jane, and turned to Grace.
"What's happened?" she whispered.
Grace looked up and glanced around the busy room to make sure nobody else could hear her.
"I've just had word that there might be a threat here, on this facility," she said conspiratorially.
"A threat? What sort of a threat?" asked Jane in a shocked voice.
"Some sort of terrorist attack," replied Grace vaguely. "But we're so close to conclusively testing the atmosphere. Surely that's not reason enough to abort the expedition. Unless there's something else you're not telling me."
Jane looked hard at Grace, who turned away guiltily.
"I also found something in Patty's medical tests. I checked her out. She seemed to be acting strange today, and after Sally Ames..."
She tailed off, unable to hold Jane's gaze.
"What did you find?"
asked Jane wearily.
"Traces of scopolamine in her system," said Grace, still downcast.
"Scopolamine? What's that? I've never heard of it."
"I hadn't either, but I checked upstairs."
She nodded her head upwards with a look of disdain to indicate the military base above them.
"Apparently it's some sort of truth drug."
Grace looked half-fevered in the glare of the monitor screen before her.
"A truth drug? Just what on earth is going on?"
said Jane, a hysterical edge creeping into her voice.
"They said it's used to interrogate people or to plant subliminal messages, like brainwashing, amongst other things,"
said Grace quietly.
"Oh my God, but Patty? Why Patty? Could there be a mistake? Perhaps it wasn't..."
"Let's just get them back and then ask questions,"
interrupted Grace, turning back to the terminal. She tapped away manically, and then suddenly banged her hand on the desk in frustration.
"Damn! I can't be doing all this on my own! Where the bloody hell's Dan got to?"
Starling screamed at Patty, but he was still too far away to reach her in time. The apple reached her mouth, then she stopped dead, her look of joy turning into realization and disbelief. She let the apple fall through her limp fingers, staring aghast at Starling, who still stumbled his way through the grass towards her.
"What have I done?"
she gasped in a terrified voice.
"What have I done?"
Her eyes were wide with fear, and she held up her hands in front of her face. She could hear four voices screaming in her earpiece, yelling at her to close her visor, but she couldn't respond.
Get them off me," she whispered, in rising panic, and then screamed, "They're all over me! Get them off me!"
Starling reached her just as she swayed and started to tumble backwards. He managed to lower her to the floor.
"Get them off me!"
she screamed again through clenched teeth. She was rigid and shaking uncontrollably, wide eyes feverishly darting around in their sockets.
"Patty! Patty! Can you hear me? Don't worry, it'll be all right. Let me close your visor,"
gasped Starling. He was attempting to pull down her visor, but she twisted and turned violently. In the melee, he noticed a strange red dust, like rust, forming all over her suit.
"No, they're in my suit. Get them out of me,"
she screamed, but she was growing weaker.
"Oh, please, Carrie, please. I don't want to die. I don't want to die."
She was sobbing now, her speech starting to slur.
"You're not going to die,"
he soothed through gritted teeth as he wrestled with her contorting body.
He managed to get his weight on her, pinning her down, and grabbed the top of her visor with both hands. His face was a few inches from hers, and he looked into her open helmet.
"Oh, dear God,"
he hissed and recoiled backwards. Patty's face looked like a mummified corpse. The skin was desiccated and pulled tight over her bones, and already it had started to tear over her cheeks. But something moved underneath. Small lumps darted to and fro, as if creatures burrowed underneath her flesh.
"Get them off me,"
she whispered, almost inaudibly, through cracked lips, then lay still. Starling cried out, then grabbed her visor and pulled. It didn't move. He stared in disbelief at her helmet. It was corroded and rusted, as if it had just been brought up from the bottom of the sea.
"What in hell's going on?"
It was Saul Davison. He was panting and out of breath. Nix and O'Keefe were close behind. Starling turned as they approached.
"Oh, sweet Jesus,"
he gasped. He stared beyond the three men. He got to his knees and looked about him in disbelief.
"She's dead,"
he heard himself whisper, as he and the others gazed about incredulously. In an ever-expanding circle from where Patty lay, the tall, lush grass was turning yellow, then black, withering before their eyes. The sky was visibly darkening, and on the horizon, a mass of black cloud had obscured the beautiful mountains. Starling held up a handful of grass and watched as it rotted before his eyes.
"What's happening?"
he whispered, as Davison pushed past him to get to Patty.
"Any sign of Dan yet?"
snapped Grace, tugging hard on another cigarette. Jane just raised her eyebrows.
"How long until the chamber is ready?"
About 3 minutes now," replied one of the technicians.
"And you've set the beacon for 5 minutes?"
she asked anxiously, turning to Jane.
"Yes, Grace, but do you think it will give them enough time to get back for the doorway?" she asked wearily. "They could be off anywhere."
"They'll be back," said Grace through gritted teeth.
She sat on the edge of the desk, overlooking the chamber, which plummeted down into the depths far below. The observation window of the control room gave a spectacular view of the array, but at this moment Grace stared blankly into space. Her cigarette stub burned down to her fingers, and she let out a yell, cursing as she shook her hand. She dipped her burnt finger into a cup of cold coffee.
30 seconds until the array is online," called out Jane.
"As soon as it's ready, send the beacon," whispered Grace.
A row of green lights lit up along the monitor panels, and the deafening noise changed tone as the array began to power down. Grace bit into her fingernails. The transmitter would be in the field now, and the team would be safely back in 5 minutes. Saul stared down at Patty's body in despair.
"Oh, Patty, what were you doing?"
he sobbed. Her motionless cadaver looked as if it had been formed over a period of 1,000 years. He reached forward to try and lower her visor.
"Careful," snapped Starling. "I saw something moving in her suit," he said bleakly. "Let's get her back to base camp," said Davison wearily. "Nix, give me a hand."
Nix, visibly shaken, staggered forward and gingerly picked up her limp body in the sample claws. Out of the entire team, he had probably been the closest to Patty. A strong wind was getting up as they made their slow progress back to the camp. A fine red dust was in the air, making everything hazy. They gazed in horror about them as they walked. The once lush grass was nearly all blackened stumps on red rock as far as the eye could see, and the black clouds were looming ever closer. As they reached the outer limits of the camp, a keening alarm blasted into their earpieces.
"It's the emergency evacuation signal," gasped Davison. "But how could they know?"
shouted Starling over the ever-increasing wind. The two looked at each other anxiously.
"Back to the beacon, as quick as we can," yelled Davison.
The clouds now towered above them, the dust billowing ever closer across the plain.
Keith Groves, the gawky junior systems analyst, knocked gingerly on the door of the cubicle.
Is Dan Earl in there?
He stuttered.
No, he bloody well isn't. Can't anyone get a moment's peace around here? Came a disgruntled voice.
Oh, sorry, said Keith. You haven't seen him at all, have you?
Bog off, came the reply.
Keith made his way back to control, walking with his familiar, awkward gait. On his way, he bumped into one of the array engineers, whom he vaguely knew.
Hi. You haven't seen Dan Earl about, have you? He's one of the control technicians. We seem to have lost him, he said.
Big lanky guy, red hair and freckles, asked the engineer.
That's the one. Have you seen him?
He asked.
Yeah, just passed him down in the subsystem array. Not often your sort visitors down there. Get your nice white coats all dirty, he laughed.
Subsystems? You sure? Exclaimed Keith.
About 5 minutes ago. Don't know if he'll still be down there, though, grunted the man.
No, bloody hell, it's miles,
moaned Keith, and set off down the corridor at a trot.
Set Patty down by the beacon, Nix, shouted Davison.
Nix laid the limp body inside the rough circle of white stones they used to mark out what they referred to as the doorway. It corresponded roughly in scale to the array chamber, and acted as the entrance in and out of the field. A small transmitter flashed away in the centre of the circle. It had just been sent through by control to alert the team that a return journey was imminent.
How long till egress? Called Davison.
Starling ran over to the transmitter and picked it up. It was roughly the size of a large flashlight. He studied the counter for a second.
3 minutes and counting, he gasped,
steadying himself in the gusting wind. Davison eyed the storm, which was growing ever closer.
Nix, O'Keefe, grab the Atmos testing gear and get inside the doorway. Starling, salvage whatever you can.
They all headed off around the base camp, frantically grabbing things of most importance.
Starling, keep calling out that counter,
Davison shouted. He rooted amongst a large crate, whilst keeping a tight hold on the bag containing Patty's drawings.
2:15,
shouted Starling, frantically gathering up some rock samples from a small table.
Nix, talk to me,
yelled Davison.
We're on our way back now, he shouted,
carrying the huge apparatus in the sample claws.
2 minutes, cried Starling. Okay, back to the doorway now.
Davison stood up from where he had been rummaging around in a crate and turned in the direction of the doorway.
Oh, shit,
he managed, before the dust cloud hit him, knocking him to the ground. Clouds of red sand billowed about him as he fought his way back to his feet again.
Get back to the doorway, quickly,
he yelled, and staggered forward against the wind. He could just make out the circle of stones nearby, and he joined up with Starling as they stumbled through the storm.
1 minute,
he heard him yell. They would make it, thought Davison. He saw Nix and O'Keefe struggling towards the circle. A dark shadow flashed over Davison's head, and a sudden blast of wind from behind knocked him onto his face. A bestial scream cut through the storm. It contained such horror and ferocity that Davison squeezed his eyes shut and held his gloved hands up over his helmet. He was gripped by a primordial terror, the likes of which he had never experienced before in his life.
Saul!
Hissed Starling in a terrified voice, but Davison couldn't open his eyes or speak. That cry had struck something inside of him, some ancient resonance which paralysed him with fear.
Saul!
Implored Starling again, shaking his arm. With all his effort, Davison opened his eyes. A shadowy figure stood in their crude circle of stones, surveying the equipment and boxes around it. It glanced at Nix and O'Keefe where they lay on the other side of the circle, and then turned away, seemingly unconcerned by their presence. It was more interested in their equipment. Davison found it was all he could do to stop himself crying out in terror. The figure was only 15 feet away, but through the dust storm it was difficult to make out fully. But whatever it was, thought Davison, it wasn't human. It was humanoid in shape, but must have been at least 10 feet tall. Its form seemed to shift like the dust cloud, but it appeared to have two huge wings spreading out from its back.
He thought he could make out two curling horns on the side of its head. Beneath the howl of the storm, he made out O'Keefe sobbing to himself.
Sweet Jesus, it's the devil, it's the devil.
Saul,
hissed Starling again, still petrified.
There's only 30 seconds before the doorway opens. If that thing is still in the circle, it could end up back in the chamber.
The creature cocked its head at the sound of Starling's voice. They froze. The creature turned and surveyed the two men cowering on the floor. Davison's body shook uncontrollably as the malevolent, cold eyes stared straight into him. He felt his heart stop for a second. Then the creature turned back to rummaging through the crates.
15 seconds,
hissed Starling.
Just shut up,
thought Davison to himself.
Shut up!
The creature stopped again, eyeing the two men. Davison was unable to do anything except look back in terror. The creature seemed to suddenly reach a decision and turned towards where Patty's body lay. It bent low over her corpse, sniffing suspiciously. A puzzled expression appeared on its bestial features. Then in one swift movement, a claw flashed down the length of her suit. The tough fabric parted like tissue paper, and a gaping bloodless wound was left across her body. The creature straightened up in surprise, as if the last thing it had expected was for the body to be real. It let out a howl of rage and hatred, which rang in Davison's ears. He looked on aghast as the creature span around, regarding him with malice. In a movement almost too fast for Davison to see, the creature had cleared the circle and stood 6 feet away from him. Davison rolled into a sitting position and desperately shuffled backwards. The creature took a step forwards, and the ground shook. Davison shut his eyes and waited for the end.
Are you sure that clock hasn't stopped? Snapped Grace, staring up at the readout on the display wall.
1 minute before standing point is achieved, said a technician.
Do we have security standing by at the chamber?
Asked Grace in a whisper, when Jane approached her.
And a medical unit, like you asked,
replied Jane, in the same conspiratorial tone.
Just what are you expecting to find?
30 seconds.
I'm going down now, said Grace, standing up. We need you here, Grace, said Jane, laying her hand on Grace's arm. Besides, they'll be out before you get halfway down.
Grace slumped back into her seat.
Array is at maximum. We have standing point in 3, 2, 1.
Even through the insulation of the walls and toughened glass, they could hear and feel the deep throb of the array.
Security! Are they back yet?
Called Grace through the intercom at her desk.
What was that? Say again, I can't hear you.
Repeat, we're just letting the gases vent off, said Adams, security team leader. Then we can open the doors.
He turned back to see how the engineers were managing. They were onto the manual release for the doors now.
Okay, people, he said calmly. Nobody moves till I give the word. Security in first. And you guys, he nodded to the paramedics waiting anxiously nearby, keep well back till I give you the all clear, okay?
The two engineers pulled the final release on the doors and then skirted their way nervously past the 5-man team, all of whom were armed with automatic rifles. Adams cautiously approached the door and shone a torch through the small round observation window. It was completely misted up, and he cursed quietly as he grabbed the heavy lever on the door and pulled.
Hello? Everybody okay in there? He shouted, unable to see past the steam which billowed out from the chamber. Anybody in there? He called again.
He nodded to two of his team and they darted into the blackness, crouching low as Adams covered them from the doorway. He heard a muffled gasp and then a frantic call.
Oh shit! We've got a man down in here! Medic! Get the medic in here now!
Grace listened to the distorted shouts over the intercom. She was as white as a ghost.
Say again, she said wearily.
What's the name on the suit?
It's hard to make out, Control. The suit's pretty badly damaged. Wait a minute.
There was a burst of static, then she heard one word.
Harvey.
She slumped back in her chair.
Patty, she whispered to Jane. It's Patty's body.
And there's nobody else? What was that he said about her injuries? Jane asked hysterically, still in a state of shock. They had all been teasing Patty about Alex just a few hours ago.
They just said they couldn't recognise her, said Grace flatly. She stared off into space for a moment, then jumped as if she had been slapped across the face.
I want another beacon recalibrated for 5 minutes. Is the chamber clear yet? Well, get it clear. I want the array ready to go again in 20 minutes. Is that clear?
Dan wiped the sweat off his brow and looked down at the device. There was enough explosive wired throughout the array to knock out half a city, he thought. His hands shook violently, and he closed his eyes and took a deep breath.
Stay calm, he whispered to himself.
He thought of the amount of explosive again, and decided that when his shift changed, he was going to get in his car and just drive and drive. Sod the railway shuttle to the airport. If the train were delayed, like it usually was, he'd probably go up with the rest of them. Now just a few more connections, and he could set the timer and relax. Well, comparatively anyway. He stuck out his tongue in concentration, and gingerly held up several bare-ended wires, held his breath, then flicked the switch.
There you are, came a shout from behind him. You're in serious shit. I've been looking everywhere for you. What are you doing?
It was Keith Groves, that bumbling systems analyst. Dan turned around in surprise, and a bare wire glanced across the contact of one of the batteries on top of the device. There was a brief spark. He didn't even have a chance to scream before the blast tore through him, crashing into Keith Groves and hurling them across the room. Davison waited for his death, his body shaking uncontrollably, tears streaming down his cheeks. Another soul-splitting scream came from the creature, and he squeezed his eyes tighter shut. Suddenly he felt himself grabbed from behind. He yelled, and then he heard Starling hiss,
"Come on, while we still can!"
Davison opened his eyes as Starling dragged him to his feet. The creature had returned to the circle of stones in a rage. Patty's body was gone. The countdown had finished and she would be back in the chamber now. The creature pressed its face to the rock and sniffed suspiciously where Patty had lain, its eyes darting around the circle.
"Come on!" pleaded Starling,
and pulled Davison away from the camp into the impenetrable dust storm. They both ran and ran. They stumbled blindly over red rocks, gripped totally by their panic now, simply running for their survival. At their backs, the outraged screams of the creature pushed them on faster. Sometimes, in that seemingly endless pursuit, the cry would grow nearer, and they thought it was upon them. Once, they saw its dark shadow flash over their heads, and they threw themselves to the ground, sobbing in terror, but it missed them in the storm. They didn't care if Nix and O'Keefe had escaped. They just ran for their lives, long after the cries of the creature had faded into the distance, until Starling fell exhausted to the dusty rock. Davison didn't even notice. He just kept running, dragging the huge bulk of his suit, until he too stumbled and crumpled to the ground. He lay there, curled in a ball, and cried himself into unconsciousness. You have been listening to The Heaven Field. For more information, downloads, and artwork, visit TheHeavenField.com